Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette dated for this date, Tuesday, July 7th, 2026. Let's begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, Champagne Development Re-emerging Ice Rink Ideas. New developer plans to gauge park district interest in taking part. This article is written by Jana Wiersema, who can be reached at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. A few years after plans for an ice arena downtown were scrapped, a different developer is looking into the idea. Colin Carlier, that's C-O-L-L-I-N, last name Carlier, C-A-R-L-I-E-R, of Royce, R-O-Y-S-E, Witt, W-I-T-T, Royce Witt Downtown, said the group is exploring the possibility and whether there's any interest from the community, including the Champaign Park District. There's numerous ways a potential partnership could happen, but certainly one of them is just, do they want to own it, he said, of the Park District. Royce Witt Downtown is made up of Omni Development President Dennis Witt, Royce Holdings Principal Mike Royce, and Carlier, who is the CEO of Royce and Brinkmeyer Apartments. The group will be giving a presentation to the Champaign Park District Board on Wednesday in tandem with Spectate Group, a Chicago-area developer that has experience building community-owned ice arenas, Carlier said. No official action will be taken on the matter during the board meeting. The presentation, which was included in the meeting packet, envisions the ice arena as featuring two sheets of ice with an option for a third sheet with 5,000 seats as a potential second phase, as well as a restaurant, market, and pro shop. Carlier said that Royce Witt is generally looking at locating the facility downtown with Plan A being land bounded by Walnut, Logan, Market, and Marshall Streets, that was previously targeted for the Yards development. We have talked with the property owners on the site and we think it's a definite possibility, he said. He added that the idea is still pending as Royce Witt gauges community interest in a new ice arena in this area. The presentation to the park board gives 2028 as the projected opening date of the proposed facility. The total cost for an ice arena with two sheets is estimated at $48 million. Annual income is estimated at $3.5 million, with annual expenses expected to be $2.3 million. The presentation suggests a few different ways the project could be funded, including, here are a few options, $33 million from the Park District and $15 million in bonds. Or $23 million from the Park District, $15 million in bonds, and $10 million from the City of Champaign. $20 million from the Park District. Here's the last option. $20 million from the Park District, $20 million from the City of Champaign, and $8 million from private investment. And lastly, build, operate, transfer. A private developer finances and constructs the facility, owns and operates it for a defined period, and then transfers ownership to the public entity at the end of the agreement. In the scenarios that involve bonds, it's too early to say whether those would be issued by the Park District, Carlier said. He also noted that the development team has not sought other public support yet. Spectate is just showing some ways that other communities have funded these rinks, he said. But if the meeting goes well next week, then it could be important to show the opportunity to the City of Champaign, too. Champaign Mayor Deb Finan said that Royce Witt has had some general discussions with city staff about a possible downtown ice arena, but there is no formal proposal on the table at this time. Still, she said that redevelopment in this particular part of town or downtown would be fantastic for our community. The devil's in the details. But to have a primarily local developer that's interested in that kind of investment that would drive tourism in our community and opportunities for our local businesses, particularly those that are situated around the area, is really exciting, she said. We're just, as I said, though, in the beginning stages. So we're all going to have to learn more. We're going to have to know if there's an ask, what the ask is, and how does the city fit into that whole process. Spectate's previous projects include the Nicholas Sportsplex and Mount Prospect Ice Arena, a 17-acre site with three sheets of ice as well as turf fields, a pro shop, an academic lounge, a restaurant, and a sports performance center. The site is privately funded, owned, and operated. The group also developed the Rosemont Ice Arena, which includes two sheets of ice, a parking garage, a sports permanent or performance center, and restaurants. The project was publicly financed and is publicly owned. However, it is privately operated. Carlier said that Royce Witt Downtown began its process of gauging community interest in a new ice arena by going to Campus Recreation and the University of Illinois student body, with the developers pitching the possibility of building the facility adjacent to campus. "We didn't leave thinking that they wanted to partner with us on an ice arena project," Carlier said. Campus Recreation Executive Director Justin Peterson told the News Gazette in January that the university was almost finished with the feasibility study on projects needed for the U of I Ice Arena. "Campus Recreation continues to maintain the ice arena, and we are gathering as much data as possible so that the students and campus leadership can make an informed decision about the future of the facility," he said Thursday. "At this point, we have not ruled out any possibilities." After talking with campus stakeholders, the next step was to engage with the community at large, Carlier said. Partners launched a survey which has been distributed to skating clubs and parents. "We felt like we were uncovering maybe a significant number of people that are pretty consistently leaving the area for their own skating and hockey and needs, mostly youth sports," he said. "But Bloomington and Peoria and Chicago are where most of these people are going. So a lot of them live here. We were wondering if maybe we should have more ice here that's community owned." The U of I Ice Arena's youth activities include hockey, stick and puck, speed skating, figure skating, recreational skating, broom ball, and the Learn to Skate program, Peterson said. According to the presentation to the park board, Carlier has spent his fair share of time on the ice, including at the U of I facility. "He grew up playing for the Chiefs on the historic Big Pond and still regularly skates and attends local stick and puck sessions," the development team wrote. "His passion for local hockey and community-centered development drives his vision for projects that give back to students and residents alike." Meanwhile, Experience Champaign-Urbana has been assessing the capacity of local facilities as part of a sports tourism strategic plan, recently completed in partnership with consultant Huddle Up Group, said ECU President and CEO Jane DeLuce. "During that process, it was determined that the U of I Ice Arena, which only has one sheet of ice, is not tournament ready, quote unquote, when it comes to attracting outside events that would bring in sports tourism," she told the News Gazette. "It's open to the public. It's just overprogrammed," she said. She added that while the U of I Ice Arena hosts some regional tournaments, a minimum of two sheets would be needed to bring in the kind of events the Tourism Bureau would like to attract. Carlier noted that despite proximity, the potential ice arena is separate from the Illinois Terminal project. MTD Managing Director Carl Gnadt, G-N-A-D-T, said the latter is currently slated to include a terminal expansion and remodeling, a new parking deck, over bus platforms, and apartments. First floor retail space was also previously planned, but Gnadt said this isn't being considered anymore as the current market and economy aren't very supportive of that. Rose Witt has been in talks with the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District about the terminal project for a few years now, and a development agreement has yet to emerge. However, Gnadt said that both the district and the developers remain interested and motivated to bring the project to a point where we can begin true design work and break ground. "We have not been asked to participate in a potential ice rink development south of Logan," he said. "We are aware of that concept and are wildly supportive of it, though. We'd love to see an ice rink developed in that location." The developers, the city, and the MTD have a meeting coming up on the apartment component of the terminal project, Collier said. The MTD announced in July 2023 that it had begun negotiations with Royce Witt after the departure of previous development partner Core Spaces. Local businessman Hans Grotelschen is also no longer involved with the development. The original development team's proposal, which was called The Yards, included several other components across 11 acres, including a sports arena. The idea was introduced pre-pandemic. However, the arena and other parts of the project became more uncertain after the U of I, also a partner on the project at one time, announced in May 2022 that it no longer planned to add a Division I men's ice hockey program. And there is, one photograph that accompanies this article. It's a photograph of an intersection with cars during the day. The caption reads, "Developer Royce Witt is looking into potentially building an ice arena in downtown Champaign, possibly on land bordered by Logan, Walnut, Market, and Marshall Streets." That photo is taken by Rob Lacates for the News Gazette. As a reminder, this story contains original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you are not a subscriber, please consider becoming one, because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us continue to connect our community. The next headline reads, it's actually a large photograph front and center of the paper for today. It's of a convertible being driven in a parade with American flags with three young women with gowns, sashes, and crowns on their heads waving to people on the street. The caption reads, "From left, 2026's new royalty, Junior Miss Fisher Fair Ivy Waldron, Queen Ava Paulin, and Little Miss Elena Hirschberger, waved to their subjects Monday afternoon during the Fisher Fair and Sesquicentennial Lighted Parade in downtown Fisher. The fair continues today through Saturday at the fairgrounds with a variety of events and amusements available. You can find more photos from the fair on in section D1 and at newsgazette.com. That photo is taken by Rob Lacates for the News Gazette. Next up, Unit 4 School District. Interim Central Principal confirmed. Two other leadership appointments also officially approved. This article is written by Luke Taylor for the News Gazette and is based out of Champaign. Luke can be reached by email at ltaylor@newsgazette.com. Three appointments to leadership roles in the Unit 4 School District were approved during the board's meeting Monday, including the placement of an interim principal at Central High School. Angela Ward thanked the board for her unanimous approval, saying that students are my why. They say that if your dreams aren't big enough to scare you, then they're not big enough. I have a dream that every student will have a path and a plan. And I know that Dr. Ponce and the team here have that same dream, and I'm hoping to be able to carry that through at Central High School, Ward said. Monday night's was the first meeting for new superintendent Giovanni Ponce. That's Giovanni, G-E-O-V-A-N-N-Y, last name Ponce, P-O-N-C-E. Ward, who previously served as the district's assistant superintendent of equity and engagement, thanked staff who handled the last semester of this previous school year at Central without anyone permanently in the principal position. Following Montia, M-O-N-T-I-A, Gardner's resignation. It was a great school year. I got a chance to meet some amazing students. We do have some dynamic future leaders, and I'm honored to have an opportunity to stand in front of them and get to know them more, or more of them, Ward said. She ended her acceptance speech with a call to action. The work starts today. Henry Walker was appointed to the position of principal supervisor, a new role recommended by the superintendent to provide guidance and mentorship for the elementary school's administration teams. In a brief thank you to the board, he said he was glad to continue serving and working with the new team. I'm excited for having the opportunity to speak with the rest of the leadership team, and I do believe that they are here to continue the mission and to further serve and support students and staff. I'm excited to rejoin the team and looking forward to a successful year, Walker said. Walker, like Ward, has decades of experience in education, including serving as the district's assistant superintendent of leadership under former superintendent Sheila Boozer. Mike Lair was appointed director of secondary teaching and learning, a position in which he will be working as a partner to secondary school leaders and a resource for teachers. I'm really honored to continue to serve our students, our families, and the staff of this great district, said Lear, who held the cabinet position of executive director of teaching and learning last year. I'm very excited about the opportunities to come for next school year and to continue the work that we've been doing in teaching and learning. All appointments received unanimous approval from the board. And there's one small photograph of Angela Ward. It's kind of a portrait of an African-American woman, longish hair, probably in her 30s. So congrats to all of them. Next up, Rantoul Village Board. Cannabis election referendums on agenda. At-large election of village trustees desired by some. This article is written by Jana Wiersema and is based out of Rantoul. Jana can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. Come November, residents could have the chance to give their 2 cents on whether the village's current ban on dispensaries and related businesses should be lifted. The village board is considering placing an advisory referendum on the ballot that would ask, shall the village of Rantoul allow cannabis businesses to locate and operate within the village? According to village administrator Scott Eisenhower, trustee Donald Robertson requested that the item be put on the agenda for tonight's village board study session. A lot of the residents are interested in us having a dispensary, Robertson told the News Gazette. So I feel that we should seek to see how the rest of the community feels about it. If the majority of residents are in favor of allowing these kinds of businesses, the village should move in that direction, he added. The board will not make a decision tonight on whether to put the advisory question on the ballot, Eisenhower said. Instead, it will choose whether to put the item on the agenda for next week's regular meeting, at which point trustees would vote on whether to put the advisory referendum on the ballot. The board previously passed an ordinance in 2019 banning a variety of adult-use cannabis business establishments from operating in Rantoul, including dispensaries, craft growers, and cultivation centers. Under current municipal code, running such a business within the village is deemed a public nuisance. Any person violating any of the provisions of this article shall be punished by a fine of not less than $75 nor more than $750 for each offense, the code states. A separate offense shall be deemed committed on each day during or on which a violation of this article continues. In May 2022, the village trustees voted against putting an advisory question on the ballot that would have asked if the village should create a license for dispensaries. Attempts to overturn restrictions on cannabis-related businesses via a vote by the board have also failed. Robertson said that he does not have a personal opinion on cannabis as he does not use it. However, he knows a few individuals who have used cannabis for medicinal purposes and have seen benefits. I feel if it's something that helps a person to be able to function in life, then we should think about it, he said. In addition to the potential advisory referendum on cannabis-related businesses, the village board will also discuss whether to authorize a binding referendum on switching back to electing trustees on an at-large basis rather than by district. The item is on the agenda at the request of trustee Terry Workman, Eisenhower said. A vote to put this binding question on the ballot would happen next week at the earliest. Workman said that many of his constituents, along with other village residents, feel that all of the people of the village should be allowed to vote for all of the trustees. Rather than having a few constituents, in one area, and a few in another, It should be. The trustees should be elected by the whole community, not just a few people, he added. Village residents previously voted in November 2018 to elect trustees by district by a margin of approximately 54% to 46%. At the time, supporters of the change said that certain areas of the village were underrepresented on the board. The first trustees to be elected in this manner were sworn in on May 4, 2021, village officials said. This isn't the first time Workman has tried to put a question on the ballot about returning to the old method of electing trustees. His last petition was voted down by the Rantoul Election Board in January of 2025. A 2023 petition was okayed by the election board, but barred by the court. Sixth Circuit Judge Ben Dyer found at the time that the statutory four-year window had yet to pass based on when the trustees took office. Also on tonight's agenda, a notice that the Hep Parker Family Aquatic Center's last day of the season will be August 16th, as opposed to Labor Day weekend. There's just some repairs that we need to make at the pool, Eisenhower explained. And if we get started on it in August, it will allow us to get it done before the weather turns more difficult. And we're only open on the weekends, typically once school starts anyway. And there are two photos that accompany this article, two portraits of Mr. Robinson and one of Workman. And as a follow-up, at newsgazette.com, what say you? Email your letter to the editor at letters, L-E-T-T-E-R-S, at newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. At 24, Dylan Knight, that's D-Y-L-A-N, Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, already has become a grizzled veteran at refurbishing tractors. His latest work of art will be on display and raffled off at this week's Historic Farm Days at the I&I Antique Tractor and Gas Engine Club in Penfield. A 2020 Armstrong Potomac grad who lives south of Potomac, Dylan brought to life an Alice Chalmers 190 XT that headlines this year's Gathering of the Orange. The drawing is 2 p.m. on Sunday. I enjoy seeing the finished product, Dylan said. It's cool to see it all come together. It's a night and day difference. Dylan credits his grandfather, Kenny Knight, for getting him started when he was all of 16. He restored last year's historic Farm Days raffle tractor, a 1955 Oliver, and wrapped up this year's Thing of Beauty over the weekend. Dylan and Leanne were married May 2nd and recently honeymooned in Jamaica. Normally, I'd have the tractor done sooner, said Dylan, who still hit deadline. You can see for yourself when gates open at 7 a.m. Thursday. It's a sigh of relief when I send one down the road. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can email Jim Rosso at JROSSOW at newsgazette.com. And there's a provided photo. Again, this photo is provided. It's of Dylan working on a large red tractor, doing the mechanics within the engine. Next up, history, area history. In 1926, a vagrant camping at the Champagne Dump was shot to death by a companion for whom he had been buying food using a large roll of bills. The victim's money was missing from his body. His pockets were inside out, and his only possessions were a pair of glasses, a pair of dice, and a mysterious medal from Nashville. Four witnesses saw the shooting, and two saw the killer hopping a passenger train and falling off. He later caught a northbound freight train and remains at large. It was the first murder in Champaign County in nearly 2 years. That was 1926. In 1976, Bill Peltz, P-E-L-T-Z, of the People's Bicentennial Commission, is running for state representative in the 52nd district on the theme of economic democracy. Because the deadline for application as an independent candidate was last December, Peltz will have to form a new party to have his name placed on the ballot in November. He now is busy collecting signatures to form the Champaign-Douglas-Moultrie Independence Party. If he gets at least 2,468 signatures by the August 2nd deadline, the party's slate will appear on the ballot. The next headline reads, Danville Police. Second arrest made in 2024 double homicide at barbershop. This article is based out of Danville and is written by Jennifer Bailey. Jennifer can be reached by email at jbaileywy@newsgazette.com. A second person has been arrested in connection with a shooting 2 years ago at a barbershop on East Main Street that left two dead and one injured. Danville police said they arrested Mario J. Scaife, 18, of Danville at 7:13 a.m. Friday on charges of first-degree murder and aggravated battery with a firearm. Also facing the same charges after his arrest in October is Kashawn J. Cotton, 21. He has pleaded not guilty and pretrial proceedings are set for next week. When Cotton was arrested, a separate warrant had been issued for a 17-year-old also suspected in the incident, police said at that time. The November 27, 2024 shooting at the barbershop in the 1900 block of East Main Street claimed the lives of Keith G. Stone, 33, of Danville, and a 17-year-old male. A third victim was injured, but was treated at and released from the hospital. Illinois State Police assisted Danville Police in processing the crime scene and collecting evidence. The investigation remains active, and anyone with information is asked to contact Danville Police at 217-431-2250. That's 217-431-2250. Those wishing to remain anonymous can contact Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-8477. That's 217-446-8477. The next headline reads, actually, it's our weather forecast. Let's take a look at the weather over the next few days. Today, 85 degrees, mostly sunny, northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high will be 86, the low is 64. Sunny, east winds around 5 miles per hour, becoming southwest in the afternoon. Thursday, the high will be 89, the low is 67, so slightly warmer. It will be mostly sunny Thursday. Friday and Saturday, rain, probably. Friday, the high is 84, the low is 69. Showers, 70% likely with the chance of thunderstorms. And Saturday, the high will be 84, the low is 67. It will be mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Next up, corrections. Man in photo misidentified. A caption on a photo accompanying a Friday story about a naturalization ceremony Thursday afternoon in downtown Urbana misidentified one of the people pictured. Lydia Shitya, who had just become a U.S. citizen, was shown with her brother, not her husband. The News Gazette regrets the error. The News Gazette strives to present fair and accurate reporting and to correct any errors as promptly as possible. Corrections and clarifications for all sections run on this page. To report an error, you can please call the newsroom at 217-351-5252. That's 217-351-5252. Then press 6, and that will get you to the newsroom. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, July 7th, 2026. Thanks for listening. I'll be back shortly to read part two of the News Gazette. Have a wonderful day.